You ready to get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Hi, welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today, I have an awesome guest on the channel. His name is Alex Cooper, and he's from WP Eagle. We're going to cover a number of things today, including his YouTube channel, which is super successful, has over 50,000 subscribers. So we talk a little bit about how he got involved there, how he got started, and some of the tips that he's used to grow the channel and ensure that the engagement is really high. We cover some of his affiliate portfolio. So he's got a handful of affiliate websites that are growing, what he's doing there, and also his new innovative way approach of creating content, which is slightly different than I've seen elsewhere. We get into that a little bit. And then we finally finish off briefly talking about, back to YouTube, about can you create a new YouTube channel in this day and age with everything, you know, you assume YouTube is saturated, but Alex shows that it's still possible to create a YouTube channel that gets lots of views and is actually monetized with actually relatively little input in terms of work. So the videos he created for this other channel, we'll talk about it being very low touch point. We cover that in a little bit of detail too. So hope you enjoy the episode. Don't forget to subscribe and like and tell a friend and share this because it helps us out massively. And if you want to find out a little bit more about Alex, then there's some details in the show notes below. But here we go into the episode.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
Hi, welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast and YouTube channel. Thanks for tuning in today. On the show today, we have our great friend Alex Cooper, who runs WP Eagle. So hi, Alex. How are you doing?
I'm good. Hello, everybody. Thanks for having me on.
So Alex runs WP Eagle. It's an awesome YouTube channel where it started out basically covering lots of WordPress tutorials and how-tos and awesome information covering that space. And then over time, it's kind of pivoted to focus more on affiliate marketing. And specifically Amazon affiliate marketing, and Alex has a couple of his own sites. So it'll be really cool today to talk about the channel, to talk about how he got there, and then we'll dive a little bit into Alex's sites because he does awesome updates, shares pretty much everything behind the scenes from the sites, traffic, revenue, you know, what he's done, what he's doing, and more importantly, the rationale and thinking behind that. So it's a nice breath of fresh air in the industry, I think. So before we get into all that, Alex, it would be awesome to learn a little bit more about your background. Tell us a little bit about
So my name is Alex. I'm here in the UK. My background, I'll cut a long story short. I didn't go to university or anything like that. I did my A-levels at Sixth Form College. And then after that, I did an apprenticeship where I was, it was technology apprenticeship. I worked for a company that did phone systems and computer networks and things like this. And to put a date on it, I remember we were installing Windows NT4 networks. So that was 96, 97, something like that. And the best thing about that company, because it was a very small company, is I had a very good relationship with the managing director. And he would often call me into his office and would have little chats about stuff. And he would be basically talking about business. And he had a big bookshelf behind him with loads of different books on it. And he would often pick a book off and say, go and read that. And one book that he picked off one day was Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which I know a lot of people are familiar with. And I know a lot of people, it changes their lives when they read it. So I took it home and I left it on the shelf for quite some time, as I did with most of the books, and never read them. But then one day I had to go into London for a meeting and I took the book with me and I read it, and it did literally change my way of thinking about money and working for someone and working for yourself and all that kind of stuff. So I then left that company. I set up my own business, and that business was in Wi-Fi. We were kind of installing Wi-Fi networks. This was when Wi-Fi was pretty new and you had to like add cards and things to your computers, your laptops to get on your Wi-Fi, and computers didn't really have Wi-Fi. So we did that. That was kind of fun. Although Wi-Fi was also very unreliable then. So it was a bit of a pain because you'd install it and then customers would be ringing you all the time saying, oh, my Wi-Fi is not working. But anyway, during that time, I met someone who then became my business partner, who introduced me to Google AdWords. And he said, I'll do an AdWords campaign for you. We'll see if we get some new clients. And he literally set up an AdWords campaign that afternoon. And by the evening, leads were coming in for people that were wanting Wi-Fi. And it kind of blew my mind that it was that kind of instant and that powerful. So we basically got together and we set up our own agency where we were helping other companies with their AdWords. Basically, I'd go out and do networking and selling and find the clients, and he would do all the AdWords campaigns. It was a perfect relationship. And we did that over a few years. We started doing kind of local clients, but then eventually we ended up in London because we realized that's where all the money was, and clients there would have much bigger budgets, obviously, and they were bigger corporate clients. So yeah, we ended up managing a lot of AdWords campaigns and doing a lot of Google Analytics work. We also got involved with Google's Website Optimizer, which was a new tool at the time, which allowed you to do split testing. It's now part of Google Analytics. So, you know, A-B testing out different buttons and different text and different headlines and seeing what got a better conversion rate. So that was fun. And we grew and grew and grew, and we ended up being one of the Google's top partners. I got to go to California and go to Mountain View and hang out with Google and other companies, and it was good times. But ultimately it came to an end because we took investment, because for some reason we seemed to think that we wanted an investor. Dragon's Den was very big on telly at the time. Maybe that's what it was. And before the investor, we were a very lean company. We used to work out of a membership club on Tottenham Court Road in London. So our overheads were very low, but it was a lovely club. They had a bar and they did fantastic food and drinks, and it was a great place to meet clients. And obviously it enabled us to keep our costs fairly lean. Our fees fairly lean. But anyway, this investor came in and changed all that. He said, oh, no, we need an office and basically all this other stuff. So we ended up with an office on Regent Street, which you can imagine the rent on that was pretty high, just up from the Apple store and all the other, you know, big stores. They're right in the center of London. And yeah, ultimately then the company became completely unprofitable overnight. And he put a lot of pressure on me and said, you need to get more clients, you need to get more revenue. And I was like, but no, we were fine. We've just got too many costs. We don't need an office and all that. And he also said, oh, and I think you should start wearing a shirt and a tie. Whereas we used to be in like jeans and t-shirt on our laptops. And yeah, anyway, yeah. We didn't get on. And he offered to buy my stake in the business. I bit his hand off and said, all right, yeah, I'm off. See you later. And 6 months later, the company folded, which was a bit of a shame because we built it up and it was fun. But anyway, I was then at a point in my life where I had a bit of money and a bit of time and time to kind of reflect and decide what I wanted to do. I was watching a lot of YouTube at the time and I was kind of amazed by the people that were on there creating content and making a living out of YouTube. So I thought, well, I'd love to do a bit of YouTube. I think that'd be cool. So I started WP Eagle and I just created a couple of very simple tutorials on WordPress, on how to set up a WordPress site, how to install a theme and, you know, all the kind of basic stuff. Because during my time at the agency, I discovered WordPress, and our website was WordPress, and I'd seen other clients with their websites and their web designers and the kind of struggle that they had with these web designers, where they'd charge them a lot of money. You know, the client would say, phone up and say, oh, we need a new button or I need a new form. And the web designer would go, okay, yeah, that'd be £1,000. And I was like, what? With WordPress, you can just install the plugin. You'll be done in 2 seconds. So yeah, I became a big fan of WordPress. So I kind of combined WordPress and YouTube, and that's how WP Eagle came along. And then I did a tutorial on basically creating a full-size website. So it was a full-length tutorial. And I've been looking for a way to also get into affiliate marketing, because I was really inspired by people I'd met that were doing affiliate marketing and, you know, that were getting paid every month and earning while they sleep and all that stuff that you hear about affiliate marketing. So obviously when I created this tutorial on how to make a website, I needed to tell people about website hosting and domain names and other things that you need when you're creating a website. And of course, there was an affiliate opportunity there because I could get paid every time I recommended some hosting. And it kind of went on from there. And then the thing that really pushed the channel kind of upwards and kind of gave everything a big boost was I did a video on how to create an affiliate marketing website using a plugin called WooZone, which was very popular at the time, which basically allows you to use the Amazon API to create a website and pull down loads of products and basically have a mini store. They don't work so well nowadays, but back then you could create one of these sites and it would start to get traffic and start making money. So yeah, that video was really popular, and I earned quite a lot of commission from HostGator, who I was promoting at the time, who were giving away hosting for a penny using one of my voucher codes. So that was a pretty easy sell. And loads of commission off WooZone. So that was it. And then, yeah, since then, I've been doing more kind of WordPress affiliate marketing kind of videos. And my most recent stuff is where I create a website, and then I then develop that site over time. And of course, I then document everything I do, as you've said, and I share every month the income and the traffic and all the work that I've done on the site. And it seems to be really popular. I think a lot of people are looking for someone to kind of work alongside, or basically, you know, share someone else's experience, because there's a lot of information and a lot of misinformation out there on affiliate marketing and making money online and all that kind of stuff. And I think people seem to think that I come across very genuine, because I do literally put everything out there. If stuff goes wrong, I'll share it. If the site doesn't make any money, I'll share it. If traffic goes down, I'll share it. If traffic goes up, I'll share it. But yeah, more than happy to share everything, which I know a lot of other people don't do because they're scared of people copying it and or negative SEO and all that kind of stuff, which is an issue. I've got to say, there is a few copies of my sites out there, but they don't seem to be having a negative effect on my stuff. So I think because I'm doing it first and because, you know, mine's the original, I seem to be okay. So that's it. And that's where I am now.
Awesome. Yeah, no, I really appreciate that. It's a super interesting background. It sounds like you've built up a lot of the skills required to be a good kind of affiliate marketer or just marketer in general from your past. And so you've been doing WP Eagle since about 2013. I think that's about right. Is that roughly around kind of when it started? Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was when I started the channel. But then, probably in the last 5 years is when I've been doing it as a serious kind of trying to upload every single week kind of venture. Before, it was just the odd video here and there.
And that kind of brings me to my next point is, I mean, it's a super successful channel, right? You've got over 50,000 subscribers, like over 4 million video views, which blows my mind. What do you put that success down to? Is it posting often? Is it just, you know, being genuine and, like you mentioned, sharing everything? Like, why do you think it's been such a big hit?
I think it's a bit of all of that. I think being consistent with your uploads definitely helps with YouTube. I've noticed that basically the more videos you put up, the more views you get. It's really as simple as that. Yeah. I try and engage with my community. I think that's helped a lot. So I try and reply to all the comments. If people ask me a question on email, I always try and reply, which can become quite tricky now because there is quite a few emails I get and quite a few comments, but I still try and do it. I think the live streams have been really beneficial to the channel. So every week I do a couple of live streams, one on a Tuesday evening, so that'd be later today, and also on a Thursday. And yeah, again, I just try and engage with the community, I answer their questions, help them with their sites. We do website reviews. And again, because they're consistent, because they're regular, they become kind of a regular part of people's lives. And I get the same faces or the same people every single week in the streams. And yeah, it's a really nice community. People have created a Facebook group around my community, a Discord. They've kind of done this all by themselves, which I'm very grateful for. But yeah, it's great. And I think that's one of the key things with YouTube. YouTube is a community, and you can build your own community of great people. And if you nurture it and if you engage with it, it can really help your stuff grow.
That's awesome. Now, obviously, this will be going out on our new YouTube channel. And from what I've read and I've heard, you mentioned like replying to comments. I've seen lots of people talk about like some of the comments on YouTube can be pretty brutal and savage. Like, obviously, you want to reply to them all. Do you find an easy way? I mean, am I just, is that true? Like, are they savage on there? And
There is a few. I tend to reply to them in the nicest possible way. Obviously get people making comments about your personal appearance. That's going to happen. Like, God, I could tell he's British from his teeth. That kind of stuff.
What does that mean?
I don't know. Obviously, we all have terrible teeth, and I've got terrible teeth, but whatever. Or, you know, I just take it on the chin as a bit of fun. There was one particular time when I was new to streaming, doing the live streams. There was one particular evening, I remember it very well, where we were just doing the stream, just usual kind of stuff. And then suddenly the comment just got, the chat got taken over by a whole load of trolls. And they were saying some really horrible stuff. And I didn't have any moderators at the time. I now have the community help me kind of moderate the chat now, and no one can kind of say anything. It doesn't get through. But yeah, it kind of really did spin me. And they were, you know, as soon as we were, I was quickly trying to kind of ban them and kick them out of the chat. And then they would kind of come back in as a different username. And it was really bizarre. And yeah, so you do get a bit of that. And I, you know, I just try not to react to it. And I guess it's part of being on YouTube and just being on social media, I guess.
Yeah.
You're going to get those people that are going to say some horrible things. And yeah, just try not to take it personally and leave a funny reply on it. That's what I try and do.
Good tips. Yeah, appreciate that. So awesome. So we'll put some links in the show notes through to your channel, and highly recommend you check out Alex's live streams. So I want to get into a little bit about your affiliate sites, and you're starting to build up a little bit of a portfolio there. So your main site, which you share the case study from in the channel, is bestroofbox.com. Could you tell me a little bit about that kind of background, when it started, you know, why you started this website, and then we'll dive a little bit more into the most recent December update, because it looks like you've had some awesome growth, and it looks like things are going really well there.
Yeah, I mean, very unscientific way of getting into it. I was looking for a roof box for my car because we were going camping, and I was doing some searches, and I couldn't find any specific information around my particular car and roof boxes. So it got me thinking, as kind of you do, I'm sure you do as well, when you're looking for something for yourself, you suddenly realize, oh, actually, there might be an opportunity here. And so I did a bit more research, and I realized that there wasn't that much information out there on these roof boxes. And yeah, kind of went from there. So I quickly registered the domain, and I've, you know, registered the keyword rich domain, which probably a lot of people would say not a great idea, but I did it, and yeah, started adding some content, and it's grown from there. And so I created an article on the best roof boxes for camping, and the best roof boxes for fishing, and the best roof boxes for a Fiat 500, and everything in between. And I don't know whether it gets any benefit from my YouTube. In fact, it probably does, because I create videos about everything, and obviously I then link to the sites from YouTube. I think that maybe does give my sites a little bit of a boost, but regardless of that, it has done really well, and it's growing well, and which is a good thing, because, you know, it's a little bit nerve-wracking when you're doing case studies on YouTube. You know, if they're going to work or not, if you don't want to develop a site over 12 months and for it to be a complete failure, especially when you're sharing that with YouTube. Although,
it definitely looks like,
as I said before, I think a lot of people do get value from your failures as well as your successes, which is why I'm always happy to share my failures. In fact, when something goes wrong, I try and look at it as a positive thing and go, okay, well, that's something I can create content about, and that's something that maybe people will get some benefit out of, you know, learning from my mistakes.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And it's awesome that you're so transparent with it. I think lots of people share their success stories, but maybe not so much any bits that go wrong, or they will, you know, make a site and then once it's successful, start sharing updates. But
yeah,
you've been in it from the start, so share everything, the good, the bad, the ugly, everything. So it's, yeah, hats off to you. It's really good.
Thank you.
So December was a particularly good month for you. Month-on-month traffic increased 33%, roughly, up to like 14,000 organic sessions a month, which is great. Interestingly, I had a look at the site in Ahrefs and SEMrush, and I don't know what's going on with their numbers, like their traffic numbers recently, but Ahrefs says 2.3 thousand visitors, and SEMrush shows 8.7K. Yeah. I mean, there's no consistency there, and
well, I guess they're doing some kind of calculation based on keyword volumes, aren't they?
Yeah,
and position, and they're trying to do some math. So it's always going to be a vague guess, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, I always remember the two tools being much closer together. There's a big difference between 2.3 and 8.7K. Remember them being so I don't know what's going on there, and I always think SEMrush is the closest, but you then have to double it. So
yeah, then it is nearly right. Yeah.
Yeah. So the site's now got almost 220 posts. And it made just over $1,300 in total income last month, which is awesome. So you've literally got an asset on your hands there at current valuations of like 40 to 50 grand, which for some people is, you know, it's mortgage, paying off your mortgage kind of money and stuff like that.
And ultimately I do want to sell it. I mean, that I want to, I think it'd be really nice for the channel to have this complete journey. And then when I have sold it, I will probably consolidate the playlist, which is now like 40 odd videos probably of all the updates, into one video and try and have this complete start to finish video. I think that'd be really good, where I can basically cut up everything that I've done and explain the story in 10 minutes. You know, this is how I created the site. And then ultimately we sold it for 40 grand, hopefully, or 50 grand.
Yeah, that was one of my questions actually. Was what are the future plans? Is it cash flow? Is it to sell? So it sounds like
I think I want to sell it because I want to have that complete story of I made the website and I sold it 40 grand, and here's exactly what I've done in all its detail.
That's a proper YouTube headline, right? How I
that
the website for 40 grand.
Yeah.
Are you also a little bit worried about like any future like Google updates and stuff? I know we just had one in December and it seems to have hit the affiliate community pretty hard. Things like you know, the big sites like Gear Hungry has gone from, and again, this is just Ahrefs numbers, but almost a million visitors a month down to 40,000. Like, I can't imagine how that would feel. But is that also...
I do worry about it. I've not experienced anything like that. I seem to come out the other side of the last update fine. I try and do everything above board in terms of link building or whatever, though obviously by actually doing any link building, in theory, you aren't breaking Google's terms. But nothing too dodgy. I mean, in the past, with my experiments in affiliate marketing, I have taken on dodgy services. I remember I had this this website called 101bestwordpressthemes.com. I don't know why it was called 101bestwordpressthemes. There wasn't 101 themes on there. But that was a quite interesting experiment because I would just basically create list posts. So like the 10 best WordPress themes for a photography website, or, you know, the 10 best travel themes, that kind of thing. And it did quite well. It did really well, in fact, because I used to hang out on the Warrior Forum. I'm sure you're familiar with the Warrior Forum. It used to be, probably still is, an internet marketing forum where you could hang out with other people. But they had a kind of marketplace section in there, and there was a guy who was selling SEO services. And for a few hundred dollars, you literally would give him a couple of keywords, and then within a few weeks, you'd be top of Google for it.
Wow.
He wouldn't explain exactly what he was doing, but it all seemed above board. So I gave him a few hundred dollars, and I said, can you get the site to number one for the keyword WordPress themes? Which is a huge keyword, obviously.
Yeah.
And he did. He went away, and a few weeks later, site was number one for WordPress themes, started bringing in a good few thousand a month in commissions from places like ThemeForest and places like that. Because obviously, as you know, digital products like themes and software, They're great because you can earn a really good commission on them, and they're generally pretty high conversion as well. So yeah, that was great. But then within, I think, 4 months, 5 months, I did get hit with a Google penalty and the site got completely de-indexed and my income from that site just dropped literally to zero overnight.
Wow.
The site also had another problem because roughly the same time I had an email from the lawyers over at Automattic, who are the people that create WordPress, saying, yeah, by the way, you can't have WordPress in a domain name. It's a trademark.
Wow.
So that kind of got hit by a double whammy. And, but, you know, it was two lessons learned. First lesson is be very careful when you register a domain name and make sure that you haven't got any trademarks in it, because they will find you and they will send letters from their lawyers that are going to be very scary and make you have to take it down. So just be very careful with trademarks in your domain names. And second thing is, yeah, don't buy any dodgy SEO services.
I mean, you said
they may work for a short time.
You said it sounded all above board, but I mean, giving someone a couple of $100 to get to the top four, that's
no, worth. It obviously wasn't above board. No, I mean, I guess he had a PBN. He must have had a PBN or something. I don't know. No, it was very dodgy, but he delivered what he promised. He delivered the rankings, but he wouldn't share exactly what he was doing. But I guess it was a PBN. He was building links in a dodgy way, and
yeah,
Google found out, as they always do, I think, eventually.
So one thing you mentioned in your December update was obviously you use Ezoic to monetize part of the website. But you went on one of the posts and there were a ton of adverts, so you've made some changes.
Like
lots of our audience use Ezoic to monetize the site. So I'm just keen to understand a little bit about what the changes you made were. And I know it's only been,
I might just actually bring it up now while we're on. But basically what it was is I've been very reluctant to add ads to my site, mainly because it's primarily an affiliate site. So I didn't want to detract away from the affiliate content and the affiliate links. But a lot of people, yourself and Carl Broadbent, who is got his YouTube channel, that kind of thing, he was saying, you know, you need to get onto Ezoic, get some ads on it. It's a great way of increasing the revenue of your site and then obviously ultimately increasing the value of the site. So I had been running AdSense, which was just earning like $10 a month, something like that. I just had one little ad unit on the side and sidebar. But anyway, I got introduced to Ezoic and switched over to them and kind of let them decide where the ads were going to be placed on the site, which they did. And I just visited the site the other day and looked at a piece of content and there was just too many ads. There was literally like an ad between every single paragraph, pretty much. And sometimes there was a couple of ads and it was quite hard to actually see the content and it was making the site look a bit of a mess. So the good thing about it is they have this really cool Chrome extension that you just put into your Chrome browser, and then when you visit your site you can switch that on and you can see where all the different ad placements are, and then you can just turn off the ones that you don't like. So I just basically turned off a few that I thought the ones that I thought were a bit excessive. So I left a few within the content. I left all the sidebar ones, I left the one at the top and the one at the bottom, but just kind of took out a few that were in the content. And looking at the last few days' earnings, and it's probably too early to say. I mean, there might be a slight drop in revenue, but
that's just January, right? We don't always drop
balance between reasonable revenue, but also the site not looking like a complete dog's dinner.
plus it's January as well, so ad rates always drop off in January. So it could just be that too coming into play.
Yeah, I mean, it's very clever. I mean, the Ezoic system is all about machine learning and all that kind of stuff, so it's always trying to figure out the best placements for your ads. And actually, when you turn off the different ad units, it will say, are you sure you want to do this? By the way, this ad unit generated, 4% of your revenue, or something like that. So you can make informed decisions. But I want to get a balance between the site looking reasonable and people being able to see the content very clearly and quickly, and obviously making some money from the ad revenue. Because I mentioned that I was earning around $10 a month from AdSense. When I switched to Ezoic, that went up to around $200 a month. So it's an
incredible
difference. 20x increase by switching to Ezoic. So, you know, I've got a bit of room to play with there if I do want to turn off a few ad units.
It always makes me smile when I see in the Flippin website Facebook group, people put up posts like looking for a website, must have 50,000 visitors per month, only monetized with AdSense. Like, nobody's got that. Nobody's going to sell it to you because you're just going to put it straight onto an ad network.
Yeah. I myself, I've been thinking about that. I've been lurking in the Flippin groups as well because I was looking to pick up a site that was maybe running AdSense and then literally just switch it to his own.
Yeah.
That would be the flip. I'd just, change the ad network and then sell it again in 4 months' time with a 10x or 20x on the revenue.
They are out there. I mean, just recently I've been looking through the Ahrefs' top 1 million websites. I mean, it's such a manual process, but I've been going through that list and basically looking for ugly sites which have lots of traffic that are only monetized with AdSense or some are not even monetized at all. And I've spent like hours and hours and hours in the evenings poring over this list and looking and checking. And I've come up so far with like a handful of sites and I've reached out to this handful and one has come back so far, but I mean, he wants like 90 times multiple, which it could be worth it, but I don't know. it's definitely a strategy. And
is it a monetized site?
Say it again.
Well, the site is already monetized, is it?
It is just with AdSense though. So it's getting around, according to to SEMrush, getting around 250,000 visitors per month. I mean, the site is really ugly. It's super old. It looks like it was made like early 2000s. It's evergreen niche, which is cool. But the site is made in HTML. It's not even a WordPress site.
And
the guy's literally got like one AdSense placement across the site. And he sent over the financials. It made like 14 grand in 2020 just with that one placement, which is which is cool.
That could be near 100 grand on the right network, couldn't it?
Exactly. So, I mean, we're back and forth at the moment, trying to come to an agreement on price. I don't know nothing about the guy. I don't know if he's, I don't know if he knows like what the value is, or he's just, he's plucked this number out of the air and it turns out it's a super high multiple. If you know, I get the impression, you know, he's in this for the passion. He likes the niche. He's been doing this for years and you know, he's just come up with, well, to sell, I want this much. Take it all, kind of thing. So I don't know, but I'll keep you updated on that anyway.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Okay. So back to your site. I know you love AWP. I love AWP. I think it's an awesome plugin for pulling in pretty much anything you want from Amazon: images, prices, product boxes, making really cool tables and that kind of stuff. But one thing which I did notice on your site was that you pull in the products from Amazon, but you actually display the price as well. You pull in the price, and that's one thing which I've never done. I've always done the opposite of not pulling the price, just because I think it kind of increases curiosity. Like, you know, you've read about this car roof box. It looks interesting. I may want to buy it, but I don't know how much it is. I'll click through to Amazon and they set the cookie. But I mean, what's your take on that?
I've never really thought about it. I've just it's just something that I do because AAWP can do it. I think it's something I'm going to probably start testing now you mentioned it. In our comparison tables, which again are by AAWP, of course, and look fantastic, we generally don't have the prices. But in the product boxes that AAWP creates, and I've started adding a lot more content that uses them, which I think we'll talk about in a minute. Because it's a really easy way to create lots of content really quickly. We have been pulling in the price, but I like and also my side one, I'm just looking on the site now, I've also got the prices. Maybe I will try and turn off the prices and just see what effect that has, because as you say, it might encourage a few more people to click through to Amazon just to check the price. And then, of course, I've got that cookie then for 24 hours. And if they return and buy something, you know, there's that commission.
Do you?
It's not something I've really thought about. And what you're saying, it makes perfect sense.
Do you? I'm assuming from your background, do you know how to set up tracking from Tag Manager into Analytics to track outbound clicks to Amazon. Do you know how to set that up?
Yeah, you can set it up as an event within Analytics.
Yeah, so we've had-
generally I've been using the plugin Monster Insights on WordPress, which will do all that stuff for you.
Oh, that's awesome! I didn't even know
that's an idea for a video. I also need to investigate the new analytics, which is something I've been a little bit slower to the party on.
Yeah,
because obviously the new version. But yeah, you can track all your Amazon links. In fact, I'm not sure how that plugs into AWP. It's a good video idea. I'm going to look into it.
Yeah. We've been setting up for a couple of clients recently, setting up in Tag Manager the event, and the way you do with AWP is just track all outbound links which contain either the word Amazon or AMZN, just in case you've got any short links, and then set yeah. up as an event, and using the label as click URL, like the variable click URL. So when you're yeah. in Analytics, then you can see which pages drove the most clicks, what the click through rate was, but then you can also dive in and see which product URLs were clicked the most. So yeah, I mean, if you could, I'd be more than happy to help you have a little look
at that. Yeah, we'll talk about that afterwards or sometime about that. Sounds really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, we could so once it's set up, you can literally do an export from Tag Manager, the container, like export the container, and then maybe you can give that away to your users essentially, and maybe we'll include a link underneath the video. Essentially just import that container and then set up the event in Analytics, and it's done. It's really, really simple to do that.
Oh wow, okay. Yeah, that does sound good.
Because that would be an awesome way to split test it, because then you could take your top two pages or top three pages, track what the click through rate is, make the change, track it for another week and see what happens.
Yeah, that'd be good. I'm gonna do that.
Yeah. Also, well, yeah, I mean you kind of touched upon it. A second ago, where I want to talk a little bit about your new content strategy or a new part of your content strategy, which I thought was really clever, actually. And I think it's an awesome way to test new content ideas. So basically, it looks like you're having a very short introduction written, a very short conclusion written, and then you're populating the rest of the post using AWP to pull in, obviously, images from Amazon, and the feature boxes, bullet point features. Tell us a little about that. It looks like it's going quite well.
It seems to be. So on the site, on Best Reef Books, we've got a lot of articles, kind of informational sort of affiliate type articles where we've, talking about, as I mentioned before, the best reef boxes for when you're going fishing. So, ones that you can get fishing rods into, and the best reef boxes for skis and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But the other area of the site, which is also quite popular, is articles around specific cars. So the best roof box for a BMW 3 Series, the best roof box for a Dodge whatever. I was trying to think of American cars. And previously what I'd do is I'd get the writers to create articles about these things. And, based on information that I'd learned from other gurus regarding article length, I'd ask them to maybe write 1,000 words, 1,500 words, 2,000 words around this. But it turns out that for those kind of articles where we're talking about a specific car, people don't really want all that waffle. So we would write an article and we would do an introduction about the car, saying the BMW 3 Series is a fantastic car, but it lacks boot space, and when you want to go away you need some more space. And then we would talk about why you might need a roof box and things to keep in mind when you're choosing one, and then we'd list off maybe 5 or 6 different roof boxes, and then we'd write about each one of those roof boxes in detail as well. But it was just too much. I think it was just too much. So I started experimenting with shorter articles. So as you say, just writing an introduction. So again, we'd say, the BMW 3 Series is a fantastic car and needs a bigger boot. And then we'd go straight into an AAWP comparison table. So we'd go, these are our 5 choices for the BMW 3 Series when it comes to roof boxes. So then have the great looking AAWP table. And then we'd pull in those feature boxes using AAWP. So that's when it pulls down the image, can pull down the price, and we have the price on some of them, and some bullet points and a bit of text or whatever about the product. Now, it does obviously depend on the information that's available on Amazon. Some products have better listings than others. And then at the end of the article, we'd have a conclusion. These are our favorite boxes for the BMW 3 Series. We recommend that you go for the whatever. And because I want to create an article around pretty much every single car for this, you know, that's available in the US. So there's about 200 or 300 different types of car available in the US. And I managed to get hold of a list of every single car that's sold in the US. And that's kind of based, been the base for this content.
Yeah.
So I needed a quicker way and a cheaper way to get this content done. So, yeah, I've published a few articles that have used this technique and they are ranking for, you know, the specific searches.
Yeah.
Roof box for BMW 3 Series or BMW 3 Series roof box, those kind of searches. The articles are coming up. And I think because they are quick and easy and very concise, people can just hit the article. They can see the table. They can go, okay, these boxes are for my car. And then they click through to Amazon. They don't read any of the other waffle about, you know, why you should buy a roof box, things to keep in mind and all that stuff that we were writing about before. So my writers are now able to plow through it because they only need to write 200-300 words for the instruction and the summary.
Yeah.
And then I hand it over to my editor, who's a whiz with AAWP, to do the rest. And it means that we've been able to populate the site really quickly. And I'm going to be able to have an article on pretty much every single car done. I think by the end of the month, I think we'll have them all done.
Yeah, so I just wanted to know, once you've had a little look at them and pushed all these articles out, these hundreds of car articles, do you think you'll go back to the ones that start ranking well and maybe update them with, you know, flesh out the content a little bit? Or is the strategy just to kind of get them to rank because they're really long tail, they're I would imagine, quite low?
I might do. But yeah, just recently, just from seeing what other people are doing in my own experiences, I have kind of cut down the meat and stuff off these articles because I think, you know, when someone does a search for roof box for BMW 3 Series, they literally just want to see a list of the roof boxes that are going to fit their car and then, you know, maybe a recommendation to say this is the best one or this is the biggest one or this is the most the best value one, and that's basically it. So I don't know if I need to add any more flesh to them. But yeah, what I was going to say, the reason why I was kind of inspired to do this is because one of the most popular articles on the site is around the Subaru Outback, which is a car that we don't even have here in the UK. Obviously very popular in the States. And that one just kind of took off, went crazy. And I say is one of the biggest draws in the most traffic.
Yeah.
So that's kind of why I wanted to do it. And, you know, some cars are obviously going to be more popular than others.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I'm not spending too much on the article, then I can afford to cover it. And even if each one just brings in, you know, 10 or 20 visits a day or whatever, then it'll soon add up when we start adding 100 or 200 articles.
I wonder if it's, and again, another test for future maybe, to almost create like super pages around the same thing where you have like, you know, best roof boxes for BMWs and then you have the subheading. So best roof boxes for BMW 3 Series and then you have your five products and then subheading best roof box for BMW.
Yeah, that could work as well, yeah.
Because the page is longer in length then. You're covering more long-tail keywords and it's more relevant. So, I mean, that could be something
yes
in the future too.
Yeah, definitely. I'll make a note of that.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that's really insightful. I see that as a super quick way of testing content ideas, especially the long-tail stuff. I mean, if you only have to write a couple of hundred words and you can populate it in its ranking and bring in traffic, then yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
The other site you've got and you've recently started is obviously another Amazon affiliate site, the wheelalong.co.uk. There's not tons to ask about this because it's still in its infancy. But I just wanted to ask, you know, this site is obviously targeting the UK market rather than the US market. Is there any kind of rationale for that rather than, you know, sticking to the...
Yeah, there's a couple of reasons for that. The first is I'm obviously in the UK, so it makes it a little bit easier for me to write about things that are UK-based. And it started basically as a wheelbarrow site, which is a very random niche. Again, I was just looking for niches and I needed an idea. And gardening was kind of an area that a lot of people were talking about. So I'd kind of drilled down into the gardening section within Amazon and wheelbarrows kind of jumped out. But the main reason why I wanted to go for a UK site was I set this site up shortly after Amazon reduced the commission rates, which they did to the Amazon.com commission rates, where they got cut down to, you know, 2%, 1%, that kind of thing. Whereas the UK rates weren't affected. They're still quite healthy. They're still, you know, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5%, depending on the category that you go for. And I've had success with UK sites in the past. I think they're often overlooked because anyone in the States will always create a site targeting the US market. And generally, people from other countries, I have quite a large audience in India and that kind of area of the world. And they often create sites for either for India or they create sites for the US. So I just wanted to do a UK site. It does have its challenges because generally my writers write in American English. So I just have to make sure that they know what they're doing when it comes to British English or, you know, original English or proper English. So that can be an issue, but it's generally you just have to swap out the Z's or the Z's for S's. Make sure you're spelling everything correctly. But if they set their spell check to UK, they're generally fine. And the other reason actually why I wanted to do a UK site was I wanted to use Karen, who is my UK-based writer. So I know that she writes in British English and that was it. But yeah, it seems to be doing well. Since launching the site, I've kind of expanded it out a little bit. I found that Wheelbarrows was just a little bit too niche. But luckily, because I didn't go for something like bestwheelbarrow.com, we went for Wheelalong, which was a kind of domain name idea that came from the community. We were just talking about it on a live stream once, and they all gave me ideas, and that's where that came from.
Yeah.
Because it's just about things with wheels, we've kind of expanded out into sack trucks and garden trolleys and basically anything with wheels. And it's early days. We have sold a few wheelbarrows and trolleys on Amazon. So it shows some signs of starting to take off.
Yeah.
I think it might still be in the sandbox. Although I've been testing out another company to do some link building. Mm-hmm. And whether it's going to get the site flagged for a penalty, I don't know. But they've been doing some link building around motorized and powered wheelbarrows.
Yeah.
Which are quite high value, as you can imagine. I don't know how big the market is for a powered wheelbarrow, probably quite small. But, and they've got that article ranking pretty well. That is one of the advantages of being a YouTuber is I'm approached by companies all the time offering their services for free or at very low cost for me just to try out and talk about. So I tend to, you know, take it. And in fact, they were suggested by Doug as well. So I'm going to try them out, and I'm obviously going to share. If they do penalize my site, I will share that. If it's fantastically successful, I'll share that too. And I'm always very clear with these companies that that is what I'll do. I'm not going to sugarcoat anything that you happen to send to me. I will always share the truth, because at the end of the day, my integrity is all I have. And if I jeopardize that, or if I mess that up in any way by telling people things are good when they're not, then it's going to be very hard for me to get that back. So anything I review, I always do it just as it is. I try it out and then I share exactly what happened. And that's what you can expect.
So it's interesting you mentioned about the UK market being a little bit overlooked, and, you know, most people concentrate on the US. We deal quite extensively with expired domains. And like the price of a .co.uk expired domain compared to a US-based expired domain, like, it's just insane how different they are. Like, when I first saw it, I couldn't believe how, I was like, that can't be right. Like, that can't be right. Like, you can pick up an amazing .co.uk expired domain for, you know, sub $1,000. For the same kind of domain in the US, you'll be looking at like $300,000-$500,000. So,
I think it's a big. I think it's probably an opportunity a lot of people are overlooking. And say with that combined with the higher commission rates available from places like Amazon in the UK, there's no reason why you can't make a .co.uk site work. But I know a lot of people that just wouldn't touch and they wouldn't want to go near it, especially if they're maybe not living in the UK, they wouldn't want to go near it.
Yeah. So awesome, that's great. And I really appreciate you sharing everything there, Alex. So, I mean, we're coming up like on 45 minutes now, so, you know, we'll start to wrap up in a second. But there's one other thing which I wanted to ask you. And it's not related to your affiliate sites. It's more of a YouTube question, and it's, you know, do you think people can still get started on YouTube today? Is it too saturated? And I just want to. I was looking through your channel, and I saw that you'd mentioned going back a couple of years ago. You'd started another channel, the Apps for Kids channel, where you Yeah. You were doing like a 30-day challenge. You would upload in 2 videos a day. And you kind of stuck to that, but, you know, maybe didn't do 2 videos a day for 30 days.
No, I didn't do it that consistently, but I did manage to get quite a few videos up. Yeah, so I think anyone's can do YouTube. I think it's never too late to start doing YouTube. I think it's a great way to promote yourself, promote whatever you're doing, or just as a bit of fun. So yeah, the apps for kids thing, I'll just explain. I wanted to set myself a challenge. It was actually for another channel that I've got, which is my Alex Cooper channel, which was just going to be like a vlog site of sort of mess around channel, just for me to do stuff that wasn't for WP Eagle. And so the first video I did on that channel was the first day challenge, where I was going to create another channel and upload to it every single day and just see what happened. And I wanted to create videos really quickly and easily. And I wanted to show that people can create videos without, you know, showing their face or even talking. So I got my iPad. And at the time, my son was a few years younger. And he, again, as most kids are nowadays, was obsessed with the iPad. And he used to play a lot of kind of kids games, like for preschoolers, very simple games. So I basically, he had a load of them on the iPad, and I recorded me playing those games. And I didn't do any commentary. I was literally most evenings just sitting in front of the TV with the iPad recording, just kind of completing these games, which are quite easy because they're for preschool kids. and then uploaded them to YouTube. And what happened was they started getting views, and they started getting quite a lot of views. And it really kind of surprised me. So I've got the figures in front of me right now. If I look at the last 28 days on that channel, and keep in mind that I haven't uploaded since
4 years was the last video?
Yeah. No, the last video to that channel was October 2016, 4 years ago. And yeah, in the last 28 days, it's had 54,000 views, 2,000 hours of watch time, 68 new subscribers, and it generated a revenue of $22. Now, in hindsight, the kids kind of thing was not a good idea, because recently YouTube have kind of demonetized a lot of content that's aimed at kids. But for an experiment, I thought it was a bit of fun, and yeah, it still gets subscribers, it still gets views. Interestingly, and I've noticed this on all my YouTube channels, it was just a few videos that pushed the channel forward. And this often is the case, which is why uploading on a regular basis and uploading, you know, a lot of videos is a good thing, because that's, you know, increases your chances of finding that one or two videos that are going to kind of go viral or just do really well. So the majority of videos on that channel have only got, you know, 1,000 views, maybe a couple of thousand views. Whereas there was one that I did on the Mini Forest Flyer game for iPad, whatever that is. It's a little game where you fly a bird around, I think. For some reason, that video has had 987,000 views.
Wow.
Don't know why. And then I did this other series of videos on this game called Tocker Lab, which was actually quite a fun little game, where you kind of get different elements and you mix them together and create other elements. It's kind of a chemistry, science-y sort of game. That's done really well as well. Part one of that series has got 159,000 views. So yeah, it kind of opened my eyes that you just need one or two videos to go crazy, and that can really push your channel forward. A bit like the affiliate marketing one on my channel, where I created that website that pushed my channel forward. I've also got some other random videos, like I did a video on what is a URL, because someone asked me what a URL is, and I thought it'd be easier to just do a video on it. That brings in thousands and thousands of views every month still.
Yeah.
It's just a simple little video. So that'd be my one kind of tip for people that are going to do YouTube. Just keep putting videos out, and eventually you'll kind of strike gold and get a video that just kind of goes crazy and pulls in loads of subscribers and loads of views to your channel.
I see that almost being exactly the same as content on an affiliate site. Like,
yeah,
it's the classic 80-20 rule, right? 20% of
content
always drives 80% of your traffic. And beforehand, you can have a list of 100 keywords, and on paper they all look awesome, like they all should do really well. You publish 100 pieces of content and 20 of them do really well, and 80% just, you know, don't do much at all. So it's very much it's very simple.
And it'll be some random piece of content that you never could have expected to do well that suddenly takes off and is really popular, and very hard to predict, very hard to research. It just kind of, as you say, sometimes you just have to throw a load of stuff at the wall and see what sticks. And 20% of it will stick really well and the other 80% won't.
Yeah, awesome. Well, yeah, thanks for sharing that and thanks for the tip as well. So, I mean, just to wrap things up, what are your future plans for your sites, for WP Eagle? Are you going to launch new sites, launch more channels? Like, what could it hold for you?
Well, this year I want to up the content that I'm doing on the channel. I think I want to do more tutorials. I've got a brand new tutorial that I'm just finishing the record on, and then I've got to do the edit. But yeah, I'm launching a new site similar to Best Roof Fox, but I'm using Thrive for that one, which I know is a WordPress plugin and theme that you are a big fan of.
Yeah.
So there's not too much content on YouTube around it, so that's why I want to do that. Yeah, and I want to sell Best Roof Box this year if I can. Once I've got all that content finished around all the cars, I'm going to let that bed in for a little while.
Yeah.
And then as we get into summer, you know, obviously pandemic allowing, summer tends to be the busiest time for the site as people want to go out camping and fishing and skiing. Hopefully we'll be allowed to do all those things soon. Yeah. So yeah, I want to see how summer goes, and that probably be around the time that I think about selling the site, maybe. Or maybe as we go into autumn when I've got a good 3 or 6 months summer revenue to share, then that might be when I sell it. But yeah, I want to sell the site this year and obviously share that with my audience as well.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, well, I mean, good luck for that. Good luck for selling. Don't forget to post it in our niche website Flippers.
Well, yeah, I'll probably take some advice from you on selling a site. So I've never sold a site of that kind of value before.
Yeah.
I did speak to Empire Flippers a little while back around the site, but at that point, although the revenue was quite good, it wasn't as profitable as they'd like because I've still counting quite a lot of expenses on writers and that kind of stuff, which I don't have so many of them now because we're adding less content and the content we're adding is cheaper.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think your advice is maybe just sell it via a group or whatever, get a personal relationship. Don't pay 15% commission to an agency, isn't it?
I mean, there's pros and cons, right? Like the pros of going through someone like Empire Flippers is they help you prepare all of the paperwork, the documents. They have one of the big pros is they have a list of buyers that are ready to part with cash. I mean, they put up
And they've checked that they've got cash, haven't they?
Yeah. The downside is obviously they take their commission, which they earn, so it's not a bad thing. And one thing which I do see on Empire Flippers at the moment is the valuation like creeping up all the time. There's content sites on there at the moment around the 40x plus, which sounds cool, but when you take out the 15%, you're still back down around the 33-34 times level, which is you can get that within the groups. The only downside of working within the groups are you get lots of tire kickers. You put a site up for sale, especially if it's got good trajectory. People will want to see what the URL is without even having any kind of intention of buying. And even the people that, do have money and do want to buy, they can be a bit difficult to deal with because you've got to give each one access to analytics. You've got to send over the revenue data to each one. The best way to overcome that is to basically compile everything into it's like a Google document and have it ready. And then as soon as someone shows any interest, send it over to them. At that level, I'd probably ask for some proof of funds first, so you don't just get all these tire kickers looking to just see what the URL is. So proof of funds.
So you ask for like a screenshot of their bank or something?
Yeah, pretty much. I've been asked myself to provide proof of funds in the past, and I don't mind doing that. I just screenshot my bank balance and send it over, and that's usually good enough. Have your document ready. In there, have all the screenshots from analytics. You don't have to go adding people and removing them when you don't hear back from them and stuff. And then, the serious people
on the
conversations, then you can start giving them access and sharing more details with them.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'll definitely speak to you when I come to sell it. But that'll probably be, towards the summertime or maybe autumn time.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it's been awesome chatting to you, Alex. I really appreciate your time, and it's been awesome having you as a guest and hearing all these cool things you've been doing. If you want to learn more about, if anybody wants to learn more about you, Alex, where can they find you? Obviously, your YouTube channel, is that the best place to find you and contact you?
Yeah, the YouTube's best to search for WP, WP for WordPress, WP Eagle, and then you'll find me, or WPEagle.com is my site. yeah, just do a search for me. I'm sure you'll find me.
We'll put some links in the show notes too, over to your channel and stuff like that. So, yeah.
That's great. Thanks.
Awesome. Thanks, Alex. Appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks again for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. If you're listening to the podcast version of this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please rate and review, as this will allow us to grow our audience and create more shows like this one. If you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe to the channel and click on the bell to be the first to know about any new episodes that we release. Until the next episode, goodbye.